Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at ohiovoterguide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Within football, we have silos.
We're going to talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and the week they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Just here to tell you, Pack is back.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Permanence Packers Podcast, from Packers Podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Todd. Todd.
Hello.
And the Green Bay Packers beat the shit out of the Indianapolis Colts 10-16. What a game. What a fun game. It was a very weird game. You know, I said it last year when shit was going bad that maybe, you know, Matt isn't like a perfect NFL head coach. This game proved he can coach at every single level. The fucking offense we ran on Sunday, yeah. To Malik Willis's credit, even the handoffs seemed somewhat difficult, but it was like a high school offense. I don't know. I was very happy we won. After the first two drives, I was like, shit, I think we're going to coast in this game. Sure enough, we did. I know, Todd, you didn't have the best watching experience because you were juggling real football as well, but what a game.
Yep. Yeah, watching some real football. So I actually had to postpone my game watching experience to after the game ended to then watch on NFL Plus, which was, I mean, if anybody's ever done it, I remember Billy said something about he traveled last year and had to do that. Yeah. I wasn't able to like not be on my phone. So I did know the outcome before I watched the game, but it was still good to go back and watch and just like see some of the plays. But yeah, I mean, talk about like is the running game back like across the league even? Like,
did you see there's always charts with like numbers and letters and you just like retweet it or nod and like, yes, I understand.
I like the scatter charts where you know what I'm talking about, where it's like they'll be like, this team is like, obviously the X and the Y both have something on them. It's like pressure rate and something else. And then they scatter the teams all over, or like when they do the player ones and they put 300 players on one thing and you're like, I can't tell who's who. I just see Earl Thomas at one end and somebody at the other. And I'm like, okay.
I love the player ones because you can just like circle around certain people and be like, see, look, this pocket here will ignore, you know, the one outlier player that you don't want to be associated with. But yeah, everything pretty positive. I was pretty happy. Did you see it was a lot of big history on Sunday? One, it was the hottest game at Lambeau Field's history. 85 or 88 degrees.
I think it was second hottest. Was it hottest?
I heard hottest. I could be wrong, but yeah, hottest.
I'll fact check.
Worked. Thank you. See, this is very important. The other, it was timed perfectly. The first time since COVID, so since 2019, that they had beer vendors, it was the second hottest. Oh my God, this is terrible. What a terrible start.
No, it's okay. You don't have to fact check us next week. We got it this week.
There you go. First time they've had beer vendors like in Lambeau since 2019. They stopped doing it because of COVID. And now, so once again, you can get a beer in the stands instead of having to leave your seat, which I had forgotten about the last 2 years that was a thing.
That's interesting. I didn't really, I guess, I mean, it makes sense that they obviously didn't do it during COVID because there was nobody in the stands for COVID. So there would be nobody to sell beer to.
True.
But one would think they would just bring it back. I don't know. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. It's one of those where the other thing that because I just get upset with them taking like history and real material things away. Tickets don't exist anymore. You know, there's no hard tickets at Lambeau. It's all electric. The other thing, first, I believe we're the first team 800 wins. It was our 800th win on Sunday. It's funny, too, because I don't know if people are going to look, but it's like you're going to look. Who was the quarterback for the 100th win, the 200th win? And it's going to be like towards the end there, you know, like Star, maybe the Magic Man or Lynn Dickey. And then it's going to be like Favre Rogers and then fucking Malik. Like,
that's, right. That's what that will be funny.
But yeah,
this did you see the tidbit too, where it was like, we were the first one to 800, the Bears were the first one to 700.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the Packers got to 700, the Bears were like 732 or 736, and we still beat them to 800, which is like, that's impressive.
Because there was a chart before too that I had seen, like an animated one of total wins, or maybe it was the all-time record between each other, but the Packers and the Bears, like you're talking about, and how... Yeah. Pre-Favre, how high above they were, right. And now, because I think, because we're right around the same number of wins all time, at least I know we were this time last year. I believe our first game last year, which was against the Bears, was to be one or two games up all time for total
wins. We're only
wins.
A handful ahead.
Yeah, which is crazy, too. Like, the other thing, God, what was it, the most carries for a Green Bay Packer since Arnie Herber? Did you see that?
Yes, I did see that.
And I don't think anyone listening even needs to look up Arnie Herber to know that he was a dude that was born in like the 1800s.
Oh, I thought he was in the 90s. I'm just kidding.
No, yeah. The leather pants and leather helmet and everything. But this episode, like we usually do, we'll break down the offense, defense, talk about this extraordinary game. Take news this week. We're going to have a little... I keep saying like news segment, and they're usually just turned into segments we have one week and then never touch them again. This week it's vomit, piss, and shit. So if you've paid attention a little bit, you saw Josh Myers puke on a football on Sunday. We're going to look at a little bit of the history with the Green Bay Packers with pissing, shitting, and vomiting.
Is there an acronym in there instead of like VPS? SVP?
Yeah. Ooh, there we go. Yeah, that's pretty SVP. Good. Shit, vomit, shit, vomit, piss. Okay. SVP.
This week on SVP.
So we'll talk about that. We'll have
Sorry, Scott.
We'll have Stump Spenny, and we will preview the Titans game, which should be very exciting. But yes, Packers winning on Sunday 10-16. I mean, I felt pretty decent about winning. You know, I did pick them to win once kickoff. After that first couple drives, it was like, fuck, we're going to be coasting here. Packers had 53 rush attempts, which are the most in a game since November 26, 1978, when they compiled 54 rushing attempts in a 10-10 tie against the Vikings. And again, I mean, just such a fun game plan. I forgot who said it, but allegedly, and I'm sure a lot of us saw the rumors at the end or earlier this week, that Love was actually close to playing. Somebody said that it was the same game plan no matter what, because even if Love is injured, they weren't going to want him to throw all that much, and they'd want him to stay in the pocket, which Malik ended up doing quite a bit. Todd, you're looking
at
me
funny.
Can you
say same? I mean, the calls would not have been the same.
I'm sure there would have been some variance, but...
What's the difference between game plan? Because the call sheet looks different, right?
Let me rephrase. They were still going to... They were planning on running it... 40 yeah, some, potentially 50 sometimes, even if Jordan Love was the quarterback. So who knows? Maybe we'll see next week how close he gets.
I feel like that's like a little bit of coach speak. Yeah, same game plan. Like, if Jordan Love's in there, that ball's getting chucked down the field way more.
I get it.
Essence of like, we're gonna run the ball. Like, I feel like that essence could be carried over.
Yes, for sure. But it's still like we were licking our chops going into this game because we knew how bad the Titans' run D was. And we absolutely clobbered them. I mean, at halftime, there's so many different stats for this game. So we had 253 yards rushing at halftime. Through the decade of the 2010s, we didn't have a single game where we rushed for that much. And we did it in a half, which is just fucking absolutely crazy. Absolutely nuts, but fun game. I guess we'll get right into the big storyline of the game. Malik Willis, 12 for 14, 122 yards, one touchdown to one Dontavian Wicks. And man, I know we talked a little bit of crap about him just because we knew the backup quarterback situation wasn't great throughout training camp. Obviously, trading for him, we've kind of wanted more of a veteran backup. just because of if you're going to get thrown in, obviously you'd want to be a little more accustomed to NFL football. And this guy goes in, and fuck, if he is not the perfect backup quarterback. I mean, I know we didn't ask him to do much. I don't think he gave a shit. He went out there and knew he didn't have to do too much to win this game. And then even after the game, everything he says is like, it's the cliche coach speak quarterback talk. Yeah. But with him, you actually believe it. And actually, I had forgotten, but now I do remember. I'm going to play this clip here. This is a clip from the postgame presser. This was just his answer on a question about the deep ball to Romeo Doubs.
I just think Romeo made a great play. You know, he went up and got it. It was awesome to see. You know, and this, you know, this organization has done a great job getting receivers here, and they have a great receiver room right now, you know, all throughout. You know, it's not just Romeo. It's all those guys. They go out and make plays, and when they're given an opportunity, you see they make a play like Wicks on the, you know, that's a quick throw, and he turns into a touchdown, you know what I mean? And throughout the game, you know, I know they wish they had more opportunities, but the way we run the ball, I mean, it's just what it is. You got to lean on that. And those big guys, they were like, hey, put it on us, you know what I mean? And it's great to see them, you know, fight through the adversity of losing their starting guy. And having a guy who's been here 3 weeks come in, and, you know, they just kind of all rallied behind me, and I rallied behind them, and we did this thing together.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's literally perfect.
Perfect backup quarterback. He talked up Romeo Doubs. He talked up the other receivers. The reporter just asked about the Romeo Doubs play.
He talked up the run game.
He talked up the run game. He talked up the offensive line. He talked up the organization and Goody for bringing the receivers in. The only thing he didn't talk up was Matt, and he talked up Matt the rest of the presser, and then he talked himself down. He's like, you got a guy who's only been here for 3 weeks talking about himself. And then I'm sure people saw after the game, too, the Pam Oliver, I believe it was, asked him about, like, are you proud? And he's like, nah, man. Like, it's like, he doesn't even want to take credit for something really cool that happened to him, too. And everything, it's just the team. I love the guy. And I didn't know I hardly knew who the fuck the guy was 3 weeks ago.
It is. And like, so like his game too, like when he was asked to go out there and throw the ball, he threw the ball and he threw it well. And like, he had two incompletions. One of those incompletions was when it's a toss-up. It was a really good defended ball, and like it was a tight window, but like Wicks dropped that ball on the sidelines. Like that should have been a caught ball.
Yeah.
So really, you're looking at one incompletion. Not all the throws are perfect, but I feel like it's almost – I just feel like it can be harder to go out there and throw the ball only 14 times and be that efficient, where it's like – not to say like every time you throw the ball, your chance of an incompletion obviously goes up, right? But like – if you throw the ball all day, all the time, like, you're going to get into a rhythm, mm-hmm. right? And you're going to, like, it's harder to go out there and kind of, like, throw cold over and over again. Does that make sense? Like,
for sure.
You're, like, you're only throwing, you know, three times a drive. I mean, that's tough, right? And I think that's impressive. And, like, to come in there and just do that. And, like, he just does what he does well. Like, those drive throws to the outside, like, when he just, like, steps into it and rips it, like, the Dontayvion Wicks touchdown, mm-hmm. the Dontayvion Wicks drop, that that chuck to and granted, now I'm, like, realizing, too, like, his throws to the right are pretty aggressive, too. Like, he really steps into them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the Romeo Doubs touchdown that we just listened to the clip of, like, all those,
deep bomb,
like, when
deep
he
bomb,
steps
like
into
bomb.
It. He's just ripping it, right? Like, that's him, and, like, he just plays to his strengths, which is fun. And good job to Matt, too, of, like, I think calling a game that was good for him, too.
Perfect. I mean, there was a couple of people, you know, just, doing tricks on it on Twitter, talking about Matt's game plan. But it's true, because it was, I mean, so simple. This is a guy who's only been here for 3 weeks. The handoffs, and some of it was just window dressing that they were doing, where it was, like, faking...
Right.
The handoff one way, and then you have Reed going in like an orbit mode, like just all this fun shit. Like, it was very boring. Like, if you just watch the plays, like from the actual handoff, it was like, okay, this is a very boring running football team. But shit was just fun.
And like the window dressing too, you're talking about too, it reminded me of like, you've seen The Waterboy, right? And Coach Klein is the coach, and he's like, remember when he meets Bobby and he's like, he fakes faking. And then he goes, where am I? But like that scene, like that was Matt, but it actually worked. He was like, okay, we're going to fake the fake, and then there'll be an end around, and then we'll throw a swing pass. And it was like, you had to do all those things, but like when they work, it's so much fun, where it's like the Alan Lazard jet motion.
Oh, God.
You know, that's fun, but it doesn't work. So then it's not fun, right? So you get those things. It's like we have the right personnel to do what Matt wants to do now. And it's just, this was an opportunity that I feel like Matt was like licking his chops to be like, we're just going to run the ball. Like this is like the Shanahan coming out of Matt, right? Like mm-hmm. that's the fun part.
That's, I'm glad you said that too, because that was the other thought. It was the first time I can remember being on the other side of one of these just back-breaking games where we had the one game with Pettin against the Vikings where Dalvin Cook rushed for like 200 yards. Obviously, yep. Raheem Mostert against the Niners, whoever else against the Niners every single time. So it was nice to be on the other end of it. And yeah, I mean, Malik too, just back on even the, he had the one throw too, the pump fake, and then he just lasered it into Romeo Doubs for the first down. I was like, that's a fucking cool play. And you were saying like the hesitancy, the first couple drives it did turn into like, oh shit, we got a 3rd and 7 here, Malik's gonna have to throw. And those couple times he had to, he was halfway decent. He didn't embarrass himself, which is all you could really ask for from your backup quarterback. But I don't know, we'll see. I mean, we'll talk about it in the preview. I'm fine with him playing this week, I guess. I don't know how good I feel about it. It'll be very, I mean, it's going to be, as far as narratives go, storylines. I mean, what more can you ask for a guy going up against his former team just 3 weeks after he was traded away from him?
Yeah, you never want to push your luck, but I mean, I think just when we traded, I think I said, this isn't a guy who can win you a game, which hand up, that's on me. I mean, I was completely wrong. I feel bad. Sorry to Malik, but like, I also want to see Love back in there, because there was plenty of times where it did feel like if Malik just stayed in there a little bit, and granted, he's a great runner, so it makes sense for him. But mm-hmm. like there was open guys in a lot of different places. And I think that, you know, maybe the Colts D just isn't there, but I don't know. It's obviously you still want Love out there.
Last thing on him too. We talked about, you know, he's very reserved. And people talk about how, like, he can't get to Jordan Love. Like, he's always just very calm, blah, blah, blah. This guy's even, he's that tenfold. Because it was surprising, the Dobbs throw, for one, you know, the deep completion, which was a great play by Romeo. Yep. But then seeing Malik run up, tap in his helmet. I don't even know what the fuck he was doing with that. Did you see the replays of that after? It was like an Elgelman downfield type thing, but he's just slamming on his helmet. I'll have to send you the one clip.
I wonder what that means.
It was the only time he's ever shown a bit of emotion since he's been with the Packers. Running backs? I mean, shit. Josh Jacobs, 32 carries, 151 yards.
That's insane.
No touchdowns. Should have had the touchdown. He had the one fumble. 2 weeks in a row with a fumble? I mean, I obviously not going to linger on that, but it's the one thing I'm going to be thinking about come playoffs if we make it. But, I mean, again, 32 carries, 151 yards. During the LaFleur era, I mean, this is by far the most we've ever had. Aaron Jones had 25 against Detroit in 2019. But I mean, still, we had that first half against the Eagles where I think we had some concern. Since then, it's been fucking awesome. It's funny to see like different types of running backs when we've been kind of used to the very boring AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones, who can make something out of literally nothing. And Josh Jacobs kind of does that too, how he sets up the holes where he doesn't want to hit the hole immediately, and sometimes he'll just sidestep into it. I think maybe that's why he kind of struggled against the Eagles, where he was getting met in the backfield more often than you'd like to see. But I mean, fuck, very fun. I mean, every single time he got the ball, it's like, oh shit, this is at least 6 yards, 10 yards. Other negative outside of the fumbles, I just still don't like seeing number 8.
That's a big negative,
especially this game when you need those double numbers to show that, like, I don't know, the down and dirt, you just need more of that paint on your chest. It worked, you know, I'll take the W, I'll take the yards, take that. I just wish there was a 2 or a 3 or any number in front of it, but running the football is fun.
Running the football is very fun. I think that the way it's just so different to watch, and I'm trying to remember a guy that we've seen that's as explosive laterally that can, like, basically there's like a term for it. I forget what it's called.
Bad. James
like,
Starksy.
No.
You remember late career. Yes. James Starks was East to West.
But the way that he will like, he'll like squeeze a gap. He'll like run up to the gap and he'll bounce it laterally so quickly. Like Aaron Jones would do that, but he was more like swervy, like not as like violently change of direction, but like
he was smooth.
Watching Josh Jacobs do it, like the way that he like plants and bounces is just like, it's really fun to watch because he's going completely horizontal when he does it, and it draws those linebackers down into the hole. And the line played so much better this week. We'll obviously talk about it, but like, I feel like we stack these successes and like, he gets more used to running behind this line, and like, it's going to get, I think the big plays are going to come. He did have, I mean, he ran the ball 32 times along a 34, but like, I think the big plays are going to happen. I feel like there hasn't been a ton of them yet where there's opportunity for them.
Yeah. And I mean, just listen to what you're saying too, because I believe he had a 30 yard run last week as well. Like, we have two of them the last 2 weeks,
which is great.
And it sounds like
I'm downplaying that, but I'm not. I just feel like more big plays are coming.
Exactly. It feels like we should have more just for how things have looked here. The other backs too, Marshawn Lloyd, God, he looked pretty good. He had the one long run called back, got hurt, and put on injured reserve. I don't know if you saw that. So he'll be out at least 4 games, which might be good long-term for him because he's had these lingering, you know, he had a knee, a hip, and now the ankle. So hopefully we'll see him pretty soon. He's a weird-looking player. He looks like a throwback because his pads are so fucking big.
Yeah, he has big pads. I don't know why he has big pads. That's weird.
We're going to be able to remember his rookie year when we see highlights because I will bet anything that they will be smaller next year, because that usually tends to happen with like young, like even Davante Adams or other guys. You can see like how they change their equipment. I'm sure people find this very, very interesting. Emmanuel Wilson also had the one nice screen that was called back as well. I believe Myers was illegally downfield as usual. But
right, per the usual.
But again, I feel pretty good about the running backs when they're all healthy now, which I didn't think I'd be able to say this early. Even the guy we called up to the practice, to the 53-man roster right now, Barry. Either way, whatever. He's played in the league a little bit. He's had a couple decent games when he was with the Dolphins last year. So they have so many good running backs, you would think maybe, you know, someone like this, you know, just fell out because they were so talented. And maybe he's an above-average runner, so we'll see there. Wideouts, I mean, not a ton to talk about. Romeo Doubs finishing with 3 receptions, 62 yards, no touchdowns. Oh, the other thing to mention, we're talking about catching passes here too. One of the more surprising things was Josh Jacobs didn't have a single reception in that game.
That is interesting.
He didn't even have a target. I would have thought he was going to be so involved every which way, and it seems like Jaden Reed almost had more of that hybrid type role of catching passes out of the backfield and all that. But yeah, speaking of that too, I mean, we passed the ball 14 times, but half of them were just elongated runs. The fun swing pass at Jaden Reed with the fake handoffs, the Bo Melton end around was fun. Every time I see him, he just looks like Donald Driver. He does that little bend with his body too, where he just looks like Driver. Wicks had that fun toe tapping far sideline, like ballerina spin catch. That was pretty cool. Obviously had the touchdown too, which is nice after the couple drops the previous week and even in that game. And then I don't think we mentioned it, but Christian Watson, no targets. He had the second most snaps, but I don't think Watson cares all that much either because of the game plan being what it had to have been. But
can we take a second too to just say, like, I feel like I see more often than not, like, Christian Watson finds a body downfield to go block, like all the time.
He is a great blocker.
He might be like one of the best as far as like awareness to go get a guy. Like, I'm not saying he can dig a guy. He's not going to dig linebackers out of a hole, but like, he'll find a safety in a corner and he will run with them all down the field. Like, and it's like that too. I'm trying to remember, like, it was a Malik scramble or something like that. And he immediately he's looking for the ball, and I think it was the one where he got us down to like the 4-yard line right before Jacobs fumbled. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
And Christian's wide open, and Christian maybe could have scored, and he's like right in front of him, and he just immediately, when he sees him tuck it, he turns around and goes and gets a block. And it's like, how many wide receivers do you see do that time and time again? it's, I don't know. It's impressive, like, the way that this wide receiver group blocks, and just, like, props to Christian Watson for, like, as much as he seems like he maybe is a little bit, like, with the injuries and, you know, dropping balls and not going after him and stuff like that. But, like, in the run game, he's gritty.
They've talked up his blocking since he got to Green Bay, which is, it's just something that we've overlooked because it's always been, oh, he's Randy Moss. Oh, he's hurt. Oh, he's right. Healthy. Oh, look at this. Like, we haven't been able to talk about it. And then at the same time, Malik Heath showed up, and that's been, like, his bread and butter. And we're like, well, he's the blocking. He's the Allen. He's right. The undrafted Allen Lazard. It's like, well, actually, this deep threat guy, when he has to block, he's really fucking good at it.
That's a good thing. You said, like, I feel like he has, like, the Randy Moss, like, tag. He's obviously not Randy Moss, but I mean, like, the diva tag almost is, like, even though he's not at all, like, but just, like, on the field, he seems like he would be that guy, but he's not at all.
For sure. And again, he won, like, the Mully Award that they give out to, like, the best guys to talk to in the locker room. And he, last year, he missed, like, what, at least half the games with injury, and he talked to the guys every single week. So he's a very stand-up guy. People like talking to him, unlike a lot of people in his family that don't want to. Anyways, tight end. So Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave, snaps a little bit closer this week. Tucker Kraft still led 56 to Musgrave's 31. Tucker Kraft, I mean, God, that catch on 3rd and 9, he catches it, and you just know he's going to fucking pick up the... I love him. I love him so much. You know...
That was a tough first down to get, too.
I know, but it's one of those where you watch the replay, and you're like, that guy's somewhat out of position. You know Tucker isn't going to hesitate at all.
Yep.
Musgrave had his first catch of the season. Where is it here? The one reception, 6 yards. He shot a buck today or yesterday, too. Looks like his first bow harvested deer, white-tailed deer in Wisconsin. So good for him. Not a huge buck. Usually you see, like, these NFL guys, like, it's funny because I'm like, NFL, who are the NFL guys I'm thinking about? And it's Jeff Janis and Jared Aberderis, who are just, like, white guys who are very athletic.
I thought you were going to say Jared Allen.
Oh, well, I get he's had to have killed multiple creatures as well.
Multiple has to.
But usually you see, like, gigantic trophy bucks. And this one, I was like, this is just a good shooter, you know?
But maybe that's because he's not shooting it on a fence, on a high fence farm.
True.
Maybe he actually went out and shot it.
Very true. And I guess, you know, it's his second year. So, he was probably busy, like, learning the playbook last year, but he didn't shoot one last year. So he's putting in the work, you know, he's not just going out to some farm to shoot his deer. Me too. That's why I haven't shot a deer in 10 years is because I'm putting in the work.
10 years?
I shot an 8-pointer.
Wait, has it been that long?
Yeah, dude. When I was going to Milwaukee is when I shot that 8-pointer.
Oh my gosh, that's wild. I know. I mean, I haven't either, but I haven't hunted for 10 years.
I know. Well, the last 2 years too, I've just been sitting with my dad in the stand. Do people like hunting talk? I'm sure they...
Guy stuff.
Ben Sims played. I didn't see him too much, but you are starting to notice where it's a clear running situation. It's Tucker Kraft. He's the new Josiah DeGuara, and then you'll see Ben Sims up on the line blocking too. They're slowly phasing out of Luke Musgrave, the blocker. Speaking of blocking, the offensive line, pretty good. Same line as last week. Jordan Morgan and Sean Ryan did rotate again. Ryan had the majority of the snaps. I think it was basically 2/3 to 1/3. Morgan did leave with an injury. I'm a little surprised that he wasn't put on injured reserve today just based off the way Wilde was talking about it. It sounds like it's a little bit more serious than, you know, being able to play next week. So something to monitor there. But huge bounce back game for the offensive line playing at Lambeau instead of Brazil with the shitty grass. LaFleur midweek, I'm sure a lot of people saw this after a shitty day of practice on Wednesday. This is how Josh Myers described it. Quote, we kind of knew, we kind of knew, didn't we? Right. We didn't have a choice talking about running the ball. As an offensive line coming in, we knew we were going to run the ball 50 plus times. Matt challenged us very early on in the week. He challenged our group and said it was going to go through us. And I feel like we answered that challenge and had a solid day, man. It was some grimy football right there. That was a lot of fun. And that was from Josh Myers. And credit to him, we talked about how in space he looks like a fucking idiot out there. And he looked pretty good in space. A lot of those long runs, he was getting to his guy. Which
he was.
Seems to be tough for him at times.
Sean Ryan was doing a good job in space, too. Did you see him get... He had a threefer on the 34-yard run by Jacobs.
I saw him. I didn't see him, or I didn't pay attention to him like at the line, but I just seeing him running like behind seeing an offensive lineman run like that is always great. You go back to David Bakhtiari against the Titans.
Wow. David didn't block a soul on that run.
Sprinted. He was Forrest Gump. That was a very fun year for like memes. Yeah, good game overall from just about everyone. I mean, can't complain. Pass blocking again. I don't think they gave up much for pressures at all. Zach Tom hasn't given up a pressure all year. Rashid Walker, I mean, he's been fine.
Side note,
he's one of the most
penalized. He's top five in pass blocking percentage in the league.
Rashid Walker, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you can just, it's like, you know, saying you just fucking have a quarterback, put a Packer jersey on, they're going to play well. The tackles in Green Bay, they're always good pass blockers. They're not going to run block worth a shit usually, but they will pass block halfway decently.
But man, they did this week.
Yeah. I don't know how much we want to get into this. I know we've gotten on Josh Myers quite a bit this year, and we probably will going forward, but there was a nice little story that Huber talked about how LaFleur went to Myers' locker room after the game, and they hugged, and Myers was holding back tears and everything because Myers' father passed away about a month ago. He missed a couple days of training camp because of that. This is first win since his dad passed away, first game at Lambeau since his dad passed away. And he said that Josh loves playing football, but he said that when he's playing football, he feels like he's closer with his dad. So pretty cool. And he also gave LaFleur a big shout out too, saying that he's just been there the whole time since he's been going through all this shit. So pretty cool. Wow,
that's nice.
Yeah, fun team. We're getting a lot of the feel good. I mean, you know, people dying isn't fun, but you know, being there for each other, that's fun, right?
That's fun. It does feel like when you watch like the post game stuff, it does feel like everyone's post game is fun, right? Because everybody, when you win a game, that's the post game that you're gonna see. Nobody sees the loser's post game. But it does feel that would be electric. I only like one team, so I'd get 31 other teams that I don't like, which would be interesting to watch, right?
But
watching my team lose would not be fun.
I'd like to see Matt address the losing locker room, because just the way he dealt with bad things last year in pressers with like Bakhtiari's injury and Jair's, like he doesn't handle conflict all that well, especially when
I feel like he's getting better. He's growing into it though.
That's the other thing I was going to do. I wanted to go back, hit that locker room speech too. It's normal. It's natural for him. The first couple of years, especially when Rodgers and all those vets were in the room, you could tell there was some hesitancy with what he was saying. Now he's shooting from the hip, and he sounds like a fucking football coach.
I do feel like for a young coach, it's really hard to come in to a locker room where there's an Aaron Rodgers or something like that, where it's like, dude, like that guy's as old as you. He knows more, like, kind of knows more ball, like at least at his position. You know what I mean? Than like the head coach, which is like really intimidating. Like,
and Matt admitted that too when they were going through it as well. He said that a lot. It's like, why would I not use him as a resource?
Totally. But it's weird to like lead guys that are in some cases like older than you. Like what is it, D'Amico Ryans is like, I think he's younger than Mercedes Lewis. Not by much.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like that's like a weird dynamic, I feel like.
Well, I saw something today, too, like Aaron Rodgers is older than the coaches that he's played, or some coaches like Kevin O'Connell, D'Amico Ryans, all those guys.
Right.
But it's another thing, too, looking at Matt, the way he coaches his football team, it is a little, you don't want to say Mickey Mouse, but when we talked about like his first year, a big thing that was talked about was having specific roles for guys. You know, we had like Tyler Irvin. We had even Darius Shepherd early on, and that didn't work out. MBS, where you gave these guys certain roles, and then you build them up through that. And now when you have this weird offense that you have to go through with a backup quarterback, it's like you can bring these guys up and just give them these little roles. And it's been kind of cool to see how that has grown through the years, how before it was just like certain packages. And now it's just like the youth movement almost, like getting Evan Williams out there a little bit, you know, Ben Sims that time, Bo Melton, have him come in and do his little end around. So I don't know. I'm very, this now feels like how I thought the season would feel. You know, it's, we're two games in, but I'm optimistic. With that, we will have a quick commercial break.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Wynn Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WynnSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
And we are back with the defense.
Defense, pretty good. Only allowed 10 points. I don't think Todd thought I was actually going to roll with him.
No, I didn't. I'm surprised.
Yeah, and I mean, Jonathan Taylor, he still had a pretty decent game. 12 carries, 103 yards, did not play in the final quarter for whatever reason. I'm not sure if he's on the injury report for the Colts this week. That was a little odd. Trey Sermons and whoever else came in after that. But yeah, I can't complain too much about the defense. I know some people are upset with the amount of pressure we've created so far. I'm not worried. I'm a little worried about Rashawn Gary. I want to see him really make some noise this year. But after these first two games, I mean, these are the two games we wouldn't want to. Now, Will Levis being the most pressured quarterback in the NFL, if after next week we don't get a small handful of sacks, I'll be upset. But I'm not too upset with this performance. I feel like we got a little lucky, too. Eric, actually, buddy, pointed this out, and he's right. It felt like the Chargers game last year, where you remember, like, Quentin Johnson dropped that third or fourth down pass, and the Chargers dropped a bunch of balls. The Colts, the couple times that Richardson actually threw a decent ball, the Colts were not going to catch it, unless you were freaking Alec Pierce, who was a complete bum the first 2 years of his career, and now he's been halfway decent. I mean, I could probably catch a wide-open touchdown as well, but...
Ooh.
Defense? How are you as down on it as some people on Twitter are focusing on the pass rush?
I think if you took away the interceptions, the turnovers.
True.
I should say turnovers because there's been some fumble recoveries, right? I think we've had one. A couple of those. One? Only one?
Was there one this week?
Yeah, there was one. Eric Wilson forced a fumble.
Right. Yep.
Eric Wilson, by the way, we're going to talk about this, but perfect game. Anyways, if there weren't the turnovers, if there weren't the turnovers, I would be nervous. But, like, this is what you want. And I believe the pressure's come. I think we're seeing pressure. Like, we're seeing some of it, just like no one's getting home. I think we're not seeing sacks, but is it like a next gen stat? Is pressures like how do they track that? There's like a tracker for that, right? Are we getting pressures? It feels like we are. I feel like we're getting pressure, which is causing the turnovers, right?
Yes. Yes. That's a very good point.
So that's what, like, because if you look at like the one, I think it was it Wyatt that had the pressure up the middle that caused the interception week one?
Yep.
Right. And so like those types of things are happening. So I don't feel bad about it. If the interceptions and if the turnovers weren't happening, I would feel bleh. But, like, they're happening, and so I feel good about it. I feel like it will come. It will get better.
And that's basically what the NFL is right now on defense. You're either the Vic Fangio, keep everything in front of you, Vic Fangio, you know, that and Joe Barry, where you just don't have these big plays break you, or you're this new pressure where you actually blitz, you do exotic things, and you take some, you know, calculated risks to force turnovers and maybe get bit a couple times. You know, we saw that week one, too, with a couple of the long touchdowns. This week, though, we were able to keep everything pretty straightforward. I wasn't too upset with much of anything. Defensive end, just working through the snaps here because this has been a little goofy. Gary led the squad with 37, or at least the position group. JJ Anagbari, 31, Preston, 28. This is the first time I can remember JJ out snapping Preston with it not being injury related. And then Van Ness had 20 to Preston's 28. So they're all a little bit closer, but there's that flip between JJ and Preston. That's going to be interesting to see, because we do have Preston signed through 2026, surprisingly enough. But this is his first time being in a 4-3. Obviously, we haven't had a bunch of pass rush yet or anything. I don't know if anyone's really shined at the at the end position, but I don't know.
I feel like the difference maybe a little bit there, too, was that I feel like in the past, it's been JJ coming in for Gary. I feel like that wasn't the case. I feel like we saw JJ lined up on the right side of the formation pretty consistently, which would mean he's in for Preston. Right, because normally Gary lines up on the left if you're looking from the defensive point of view, and then you know it seemed like with the 20 snaps that LVN got, he was kind of like he was in the middle of the formation once or twice. Oh, I want to say, yeah, he kind of moved around a little bit. I think those might have been like third and longs, so maybe we had multiple end or three ends out there instead of just keep Kenny out there too and then have the three ends. Maybe that was the play. I don't know, but. I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like that's the increase in JJ, because I did notice him being on the opposite side than he usually is.
Sure. Yeah, there you go. And LVN did have a tackle for loss, too. That was it. You know what I just thought of right there, too?
What's that?
LVN. Well, in Jeff Hafley's defense, more like LVN.
Oh.
Joke of the year?
Like it.
Yeah, really fucking. I mean, he was technically an end last year, too. Defensive tackles? Not a ton to talk about. I mean, Wyatt's had a pretty good start to his season. Usually, at least last year, it was, hey, he has such a high pressure rate or some bullshit. And I'm like, but I'm not seeing anything on the field. It's kind of like what Rashawn Gary was early on, too, where it's like, well, he's creating pressure or, you know, he's forcing things. It's like, but I'm not seeing much of that. He had the fumble recovery last week. He had the sack this week. So, especially out of the 2022 class, I'm relatively high on him compared to the other guy who was taken in the first round. And the other thing I talk about is Colby Wooden was a healthy scratch in this game, the 2023 draft pick, who I don't know. He might, Justice Mesquite especially has focused on this, how it seems like they're trying to go away from him. And they kind of even were this time last year. So I wonder how long he's going to, I'm sure he'll be on the roster probably all year, but if we're eventually going to have to draft some defensive linemen, and Colby Wooden's probably the guy on the chopping block. And fuck Carl Brooks. I thought we would have heard from him a little bit more so far this year, too.
Carl feels like he should be on, he should show up a lot more than Colby Wooden should. Especially like, just Carl Brooks feels like he's more of a three tech that you can put in there, but then it's like Kenny doesn't come off the field.
Right.
So it's like, I don't, maybe that's the difference. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And I guess with Brooks, I want to see him more because there, you know, they have those stupid, like, if you could redo this year's draft.
Right.
I saw a couple of them had him as like a first round pick at the back end. And now I'm like, okay, I know that those were guys like probably just looking at stats for
Carl Brooks.
Season. Yeah. And he was a fine player last year, but I don't know. I guess I'm somewhere in between, but I still would have thought we would have seen more from him thus far. Linebacker, you talked about already, Todd. Eric Wilson, who was a captain, only played 8 snaps, but God, if he wasn't perfect on all of them.
Hell of an 8 snaps. Holy shit.
On defense, whatever, the EPA, which is just like how much you bring on a on per play, he was like 4.78. Usually if you're just positive, it's a good thing, and he was that far positive on just a handful of plays. But again, stopping the option on 3rd and 1, obviously the INT where he just ran the route for the receiver. And I put this out on Twitter, and I think I said similar things last year, but it's like when you need to make a play, Eric Wilson's, or when you least expect it, he's going to make the play. Like he had a couple fourth down stops last year. He recovered the fumble against the Niners in the playoffs. Like he's just...
He recovered Keyshawn's fumble?
Yep.
Yeah.
He's, I don't think he's someone you want to rely on. Like he's going to be a guy where if he's starting for you, you're probably looking to replace him come the draft. But when he's here, it's like, fuck, you can't really complain. And I still, every time I see him, he is not 6'1". That 4'5", he is not, he is 6 feet. I need to like measure him or something because there's no way. He looks like the shortest guy on the field. on defense every time they show him, but he's 6'1". I just don't believe it. Negative stuff. I mean, McDuffie was pretty solid. I thought he had a good hit on Jonathan Taylor to break up a pass, but fucking Quay, man. We might be in Mayday, Quayday territory here.
Ooh.
We'll see if he gets more accustomed to this defense. Maybe we move him off of being the Mike linebacker playing the middle, because it's...
That's what you have. You have to do that. It's weird. He's not a Mike.
You can.
He's a weak side linebacker.
You can see him saying, like, oh shit, during plays, I swear to God, where he's just out of it. He gets sucked into blocks, like in Madden early on, where it's like you get close enough to an offensive lineman, you're just locked in. It's tough for it, because like he will literally run to a block instead of taking on a ball carrier, just because I think he thinks that's his responsibility. He got stiff-armed by Jonathan Taylor. That wasn't good. Are you worried about Quay?
I'm worried about Quay if we keep him in the position he's in right now. I think he needs to play the will. He needs to play the weak side. He can't be the Mike linebacker. I don't think that's a good fit for him. I don't know. I mean, I don't.
But then it's like, who do you put there?
I mean, it's like, is it Isaiah? But like, because we don't run base much, right? No, nobody in the NFL is running a whole lot of base, right? Everyone's running a lot of nickel and then, you know, base.
Even this week, we didn't much for how much we were, you know, focused on stopping the run with Richardson and everything.
I think you either put Isaiah in or you just elevate Edger and Cooper. As the season comes on, Cooper's going to become more involved, right? And so maybe does he take the Mike position eventually, and then Quay moves outside? Because I would much rather see Quay chasing things outside the tackles than see him filling gaps between the tackles. That's just not – it's not a good fit, and we shouldn't – I feel like it's a detriment to Clay – to Quay. Clay, that was a Freudian slip.
I remember him.
It's a detriment to him, and it's a detriment to the team. And I just don't – I feel like they're trying to make it work, but I feel like if we go too many more weeks, it's like, Halfley, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, but it's like you have – you know, it worked out fine this week. I think you got to stick with them. You know,
it worked out fine on – but the run, if they had been able to lean on the run, which they weren't because Jonathan Taylor goes out late in the game, but like they were gashing us.
Maybe – I mean, it is a new defense. It is Quay. You know, there's been talks of, you know, it takes him a little bit longer to get things. And then at the same time, that's kind of the knock against Edger and Cooper. And we've seen how he struggled just lining up. Again, this week, he lined up a couple times in the wrong spot. So it's tough when the most talented guys you have are Quay and Cooper, but they aren't as experienced. And then you have guys like Isaiah McDuffie and Eric Wilson, who are fine, but do you really want them to be the heart and soul of your defense? I don't know. Maybe Eric Wilson. I don't know if he can actually, you know, have the green dot and be a Mike there, but it's very...
Yeah, I don't know. I would feel better about McDuffie just being in there and playing tackle to tackle than I would Quay. It's just not... Yeah. It just doesn't fit. I don't know.
And also, Edger Cooper only had 7 snaps this week after he had like 8 or 9 last week, and LaFleur said he was going to play more. It felt like Cooper was out there a bit. Like, I just remember seeing that 56. Maybe it's just my eyeballs are like locked in when I see that number, but whatever. We'll see. I am worried. I'm going to put this out there now. Probably said it before. Maybe people have said this in the past. I wouldn't be shocked if this offseason we see that Quay has been moved to defensive end. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if they try to have him put on a bunch of weight.
Really?
I think they might have to dumb the game down for him. I don't know. Just literally rush.
I think you just put him at weak side.
We'll see. I don't know. I think his days, we'll see. I don't want to get too down on the guy early in this season, because we do that a lot. But usually we're right. I'm always fucking right. But last year, like, Rashid Walker, you know, we wanted him taken out, and he's been pretty solid for us since he's been the left tackle. Corner? Not a ton to talk about here. I don't remember seeing Jair at all. For me, the biggest thing was Carrington Valentine, who did outsnap Stokes 32-24, but that's not what's important. What's important is that last number, 24. I'm still getting used to Carrington Valentine wearing 24. When I saw 24 out there at first, I was like, who's 24? I'm like, Quentin Rollins? No, that was forever
ago. I literally thought the exact same thing when I saw him.
And then he had to see the actual nameplate. It's like, oh, that's right. He changed his number. So, whatever. Safety, Xavier again with another pick. I mean, God, he's so good. Again, I could have picked this off. Darnell Savage probably couldn't have. But yeah, thrown right to him.
Quay couldn't have.
Quay couldn't have either. And then Evan Williams, after not playing any snaps last week, was up to 36% of the snaps. He obviously had the INT to close out the game, and he recovered the onside kick, which just feels right for a player like him who's just a football player, you know, mid-round pick who it seems like was undervalued, like Micah Hyde, and he's just going to do a little bit of everything. He'll catch the easy pick, and he'll scoop up the onside kick, which I was a little worried about. I'm always worried when the player forces the issue, so I was glad to see it not bounce off him. But I was also prepared to be pissed off at Rich Bisaccia because... that takes very little at this point. Yeah,
you were prepared for that.
But yeah, any thoughts on the secondary?
I thought it was interesting just with, you know, Carrington Valentine coming in. It's like forcing other guys to have roles is interesting that we haven't had that before, where you're like, hey, let's get Valentine in there. Hey, let's get Evan Williams in there. Like, we haven't ever had that before. It's been like, hey, let's survive with the guys that we can put on the field in the past. Yeah. So it's nice to like have depth where you have depth issues. I would say my one concern, and it's not like a real concern on the secondary, but like Javon Bullard may need to slow down and break down and make a tackle at some point. He's a missile, and it's fun to watch until he bounces off the running back. And you're like, you should probably make that tackle. So, like, hopefully he's getting coached. I'm sure he's getting coached up. And in the next couple weeks, we kind of see him actually, like, form up a tackle. Like, he's fast. He seems instinctive. He's fun to watch. But it's like, okay, like, you're going to have to break down and make the tackle on Jonathan Taylor. Like, you don't have to stop him in his tracks, right? Just make the tackle. So, it'll be interesting to see how he develops throughout the year. He's super fun to watch. He had his share of snaps cut back with Evan Williams being on the field, but I don't think that means anything for him. I think he's still gonna carry the load.
He's a little smaller than I was expecting. Like, actually seeing
he
him
is small.
Because his voice, if you've ever heard his voice, it is so damn deep too. And you know, he's from the SEC. I just figure big physical safety, not exactly the case. But hey, AJ Brown, he's. I don't think it was from, you know, the hit, but we saw that hit week one from Bullard just smacking him.
Yeah.
A rookie in his first game. So I don't know. He's.
I feel like Jair did that too. Like, Jair showed up, like we've talked about, what was the play against the Vikings where he goes and he blows up the screen? Like, I feel like young guys a lot of times play like that and then they get hurt and then they go, okay, let's dial it back a little, play a little bit smarter. Like, you can't, your body can't survive in the NFL like it can in college. So
for sure. Yeah, you always see that with running backs where you're like, oh my God, this running back. Did you see him? He played last week. He had eight snaps, he averaged 10 yards a carry, and then he never does that again.
Yeah. Right.
Special teams, last thing to talk about. Braden Narveson. Apparently, after he made one of the field goals, Matt Schneiman put this out there. He did the Get the Gat Dance, which... I'm old, so it.
Excuse me?
It's to the point now where I hear of, you know.
What did you say?
Get the Gat Dance? What do you think the Get the Gat Dance is?
I mean, a gat is a gun.
True. Do you know what it is, though, what the dance is?
I'm literally Googling it now.
Yeah, I saw, because that's what I did. I saw the tweet, and I'm like, I think that's the, like, get the gat, and you're, like, moving your shoulders a bit, and you're, like, shooting.
Oh, okay.
So I Googled it, and I was like, oh, I did know what that is, but we're getting old enough now where it's like, oh, shit, I'm fading away from all these.
Is that old?
No, I think...
Is that an old dance? Is it a new dance?
I think it's somewhat new, like the last couple of years. Maybe it's sampled from an older song. It's from, like, some...
Well, I looked it up.
Okay.
And, well... Oh my God! I looked it up, and Justin Jefferson was doing, because Justin Jefferson was doing it on a TikTok. So when I Googled it, that was, and it was in college.
Maybe it's not even.
So he was at.
Oh.
So it was in college. So it must be old.
Well, I guess
we're just that old. It's just now trickling down to us.
Well, we'll have to see. Tune in next week.
We saw a kicker do it, and we're like, "Oh, what is this? What is this interesting dance?"
What culture is this?
Get the
man
gat,
from?
You say?
But yeah, Narveson, what was he 3 for 4? He
3 for 4.
Okay.
He kicked field goals all around 45 yards, but when he was forced to kick a 45 yarder, that was when it wasn't good. So we just need to, hey, take a sack, push us just back out of 45 yards, or hey, do the tush push to get one more yard, whatever we got to do to not kick a 45 yarder. Cause I believe it's back to back weeks. He's missed a 45 yarder.
Oh, I didn't realize. I think it was.
I thought someone said that. Maybe we'll have to fact check ourselves.
Yeah, we can't do it right now. I think it was a 42-yarder last week, and it was a 45-yarder this week. But this one, unlike last week, so maybe this will help you get in the brain of Spencer here. So he's, you know, last week the Eagles game, I said that miss he had. I felt better about that miss than I felt about makes Anders has had in the past. The miss,
yeah.
The miss that Braden had this week, you knew off the jump that fucker was no good. So,
well, because he kicks the ball straight.
Yeah.
Like when he kicks it, it goes straight. And like,
but he even reacted
it's like predictable.
A little bit. Yeah. But it just kept fucking going. I don't know. We'll see. I still feel fine about him. I guess if he misses a kick this week, then actually concerned. But we're still in like this, you know, this is, we just had a tumultuous relationship with you know, our last partner here. And now it's like we're getting out of it. This is our rebound. So he's still cool and stuff. You know, we still like him. We like the chin strap beard and stuff. You know, he's a little wacky. Mm-hmm. He's a little exotic. He's different. But maybe he won't be a long-term. I hope he is. I think he will be. We'll see. But
I think he's going to develop. Not a lot of people know this.
I'm ready to learn.
So people are calling this the Malik as we move into the next week. This is the Tennessee is the Malik Willis revenge game. This is really the Braden Narveson revenge game.
Oh, I forgot.
A lot of people
don't
know this. His wife from Prescott, Wisconsin.
No.
Not a lot of people know that. Packer fans out
just
there.
Just across the bridge?
Rejoice. I think didn't she say she was like, I'm going to be the most famous person in my hometown, which I think has like 3,000 people.
Yeah. God, I was going to say something else there too with Narve. Oh, that's what it was. I tweeted out there too. I don't know why I didn't think of it week one, but Narve Dog. I just love that that's his nickname.
Oh,
Nard Dog from the
office.
Instead
of Nard Dog,
I assume.
Yes.
But it was like, it was automatically when he made that first field goal, I'm like, ah, there you go, Narve Dog. And I'm like, oh, Narve Dog. I've never even thought of that
before.
And then I go on Twitter and I saw Kyle Kuzvina, the mayor of Green Bay, the fake one, had tweeted the same thing, and I'm like, okay, cool, I like that nickname. The real guy to talk about, Daniel Whelan, holy fucking shit, is he good.
What's the nickname for him?
I don't know, he's...
Whelan and Dealan?
That's pretty good, he's Irish.
I just came up with that.
Oh, the Irish car bomb, the Irish something bomb, remember,
oh,
we talked about that.
That seems dark,
but
I like
fun.
It.
But it's fun, I like violence a little bit there, but God.
Yeah, a little bit of violence is good.
That one where he flipped it, it was like the most unassuming boomer of a punt where he just punted it, fair catch, literally fucking flipped the field. It was what, 56, 59 yards?
Yeah.
Awesome. It's one of those, for as much as I've gotten on Goody too throughout the years and how he's completely mismanaged special teams in general, with drafting long snappers, drafting kickers, sticking with Whelan last year when he had Pat O'Donnell, who was a pretty proven veteran, and most people thought he was going to stick with Pat O'Donnell, especially with the kicking concerns and holding. What a great move to take that risk and go with Whelan. I'll wait to talk shit about fucking Rich Bisaccia for a different week, but
yeah,
with that, do you have anything?
That's big of you.
Yeah, no, we are going to talk about it. So remember last week? So the kickoffs have been weird. I think we've kicked every single one of them into the end zone, but one kick. That one kick we didn't, we kicked it short. We tackled them on special teams at the 15. The Eagles started their drive at the 15-yard line. Every other kickoff against both the Eagles and the Colts, they've started at the 30. Okay? When asked, why did you not kick off completely? This is what Rich Bisaccia said. This was last week, I think Wednesday or Thursday, during availability.
Mistake to say Braden should just kick that kickoff every time, like that first one where he kind of squibbed it down there. Can you just not do that every time? Because it sure looked like it worked pretty well.
Well, I think, you know, that one worked, right? If you turn on the Buffalo game from the other day, they had a vicious wind, they had a holder out there, they kicked one out of bounds, they had to kick into the wind a bunch. So I think as time goes on, they're all going to get a little bit better at some of those trick kicks, if you will, or those placement kicks in the hit zone. So I just think time will tell what people are going to do. And then, you know, the weather's going to change for all of us here sooner or later, and it may change some of the things people do as well.
So his reasoning for this is because it was windy in Buffalo? He's saying that if you're going to say this, just say you don't want to take any risks. That makes sense to me. Don't tell me, look at what happened in Buffalo when it was windy and they kicked one out of bounds. You were on a different continent, Rich, and you're complaining about that? The other reason why I'm bitching about this, there's more great evidence of this. The special teams coordinator in New Orleans, who should be our special teams coordinator, but Mark Murphy was cheap. I can't remember his name right now.
Rizzi?
Darren Rizzi. Very good. The Saints have allowed the most kick returns in the NFL so far this year. Him, Rich, and some other guy, Jim Fossil maybe, were the ones who helped out coming up with this kickoff rule. Rizzi, who is a special teams god, is allowing returns, and they've been great on special teams. They're great every year. Rich doesn't want to do it because, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit too much work, it's too much to practice with, and he's just going to wait until it all gets figured out this year. So we'll see if some rules change down the line. Todd, I don't know if you have anything else to add on this. It's stupid special teams talk, but Rich, it's like, just give me something, man. Let's just, don't give me bullshit.
Well, I did take the time just during the clip and everything to ask ChatGPT to come up with some good nicknames for Dan Whelan.
Okay.
And so I got, not all of them are good. There's 10 of them here. I'm just going to read a couple of them.
Okay.
But there's Wheel in the Wind.
That's pretty good. You almost need something good, like concrete that you could put in your hand. Wind isn't like a good nickname, but that is, I do like the alliterations.
Yeah, there's Field Flipper, which I thought, like, oh, it doesn't have anything to do, like, ChatGPT just really knocked that one out of the park.
If we were the Dolphins.
There's Puntastic Dan.
I like Puntastic. I don't know what that has to do with Dan.
I feel like it's like, what's the groundhog's name? It kind of sounds
Punks
like that.
Punxsutawney Phil?
Sure, it's kind of like that. I think maybe like Wheel in the Whirlwind was another one that came up with. But I feel like Wheel in the Wind, I kind of like.
That's not bad. It's just,
I also like Wheelin' and Dealin'.
Wheelin' and Dealin' is good. Wheelin' and Dealin' is the winner. Someone else has probably said that. So yeah.
No, I said okay. It first.
There you go, Todd.
I said it first. I came up with it on the pod.
Perfect. We'll sell shirts. With that, take news.
Football time. Take news.
Take news for the week. Not really take news, but I haven't been able to use that sound bite bump intro in a while. We are Todd, I don't think we were recording, but you were saying this is SVP. Shit, vomit, poop. So for those of you who may not...
No, piss. Shit, vomit, piss.
Sorry. Yeah, shit, vomit, piss.
You can't bookend the poops.
So for those of you who are confused, Josh Myers puked on a football this week. And I think people did notice that happen.
On a passing play,
On a passing play. People noticed that maybe would be a fun little viral clip, you know, haha, he puked on the ball. Well, no, because after the game, Malik Willis was asked some question, or actually Matt LaFleur was, with a third down play, and Matt said that LaFleur, I asked Malik why he didn't throw it on that third down, and he told me Josh threw up on the ball, which is fucking hilarious. For me, I like goofy stuff, I like weird stuff, I love the Packers. So Matt LaFleur won like this training camp, saying any talk about a number one receiver makes him want to vomit. Earlier on, years previously, he talks about waking up with their piss being hot, and now
hot piss.
Now actual vomit being on Lambeau Field on the playing football. I'm like, this is fucking hilarious. This is stupid shit. So I just want to explore a little bit here. We can dive deep on this vomiters on the team. And we're going to talk a little bit about shit and piss too. So So did you see the replay of Malik dropping back and wiping his hand?
Wiping his hand as he takes the snap? Yes.
And I'm trying to think of, like, so he didn't, like, kneel the ball or anything, but it's like, was it wet enough that he didn't feel comfortable throwing to Tucker Kraft, who I think was the closest receiver? That was because watching it live, that was the one play from Malik where it was like, well, what was he thinking here? Because it looked like a broken play, but it was because of the vomit. I guess to you, Todd, do you think you could throw a ball covered in vomit?
I think if you were prepared to get a vomit-covered ball, you could throw it. Because it's like when the ball's wet, right? Like, you can throw a wet ball, mm-hmm. but you got to be, like, your first throw of a wet ball has got to be, like, it's going to be a bad throw. But, like, your second and third, you're like, okay, I got to, like, grip the ball a little harder. I got to rip it. Same thing with catching the ball. When you catch a wet ball, you got to be prepared to catch a wet ball. So it's, like, different.
And they do practice that, too. And it looked like it was a hydration vomit. He did actually vomit two plays in a row. In fact, Ryan Wood, the amazing journalist that he is, he asked Myers, what goes through your mind when you puke right before the snap?
Like, basically during the snap.
Quote, and I love this. This is just, again, LaFleur's message just going on to everyone. What are you thinking right before the snap? I've got to do my job. Unfortunately, no one cares if I'm throwing up. If I give up a sack, I've got to block him. So I'm just like, oh my God, I can't not block this guy right now. I have to get this. It's pretty much the only thing going through my mind. Elgton Jenkins was asked. He said he also puked in this game, so I don't know if anyone found that clip, but Elgton Jenkins did also puke. Again, it was a very hot day at Lambeau. These guys weren't used to it. And again, Google just sucks now. I was trying to find this. For those that do remember, a couple of years ago, that hot game we played against the Bucks in Tampa, Alan Lazard,
oh yeah,
he puked a couple times on the sideline. Those were violent vomits too. So there you go, a little bit of puking there. Okay, so that's a lot of puke. You want to talk a little bit about piss, Todd?
Am I supposed to be prepared to talk about piss?
I'm asking if you're prepared because, you know, we're talking about bodily functions. I just want to make sure.
I feel like this is unfair. You had a layup with the vomit. I don't have anything on piss.
Oh, no, I'm just telling you. I'm going to tell you. Oh, again, just Mike Daniels pissing himself.
I'm ready to listen to you talk about piss. Yes.
Mike Daniels pissed himself against the Ravens when we lost 23-0. After the game, he did say he just sweats a lot, which raises the question, why didn't you sweat a lot in that location in previous games?
Yeah.
Not a ton of piss. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen players piss on the sidelines sometimes when they get they used to hold the towels up so someone could pee in a cup.
Well,
and now they just
Mark
have
Schlereth. Mark Schlereth was, if you guys remember, a big piss dog.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys are PMT watchers at all, but he used to piss himself all the time. Apparently,
offensive lineman for the Broncos. Yes.
Yes. Other than that, I can't think of like any other piss boys.
Yeah, I couldn't think of too much either.
I mean, it happens, right? Because it's like, what are you gonna do? If you got to piss, you're not, and you're, especially like linemen, like you can't, there's no subbing out. Those guys play 100% of the snaps. You can't sub out.
So I had this for shit. Maybe it's piss. I don't know if you've ever heard this story. Have you heard about the 1996 divisional round game against the Niners at Lambeau?
No.
So this was the Mud Bowl. If you ever see, you know, Favre in a muddy jersey or him and Steve Young like hugging or whatever, it was the Mud Bowl game. Mud. Poop, right?
Right, both brown.
Desmond Howard, you might remember, Super Bowl MVP a couple months after that. He's the kick returner. At halftime of that game, he was covered in mud, so he switched his jersey. So it's taken him a little bit longer in the locker room. The Niners kick off at halftime. Desmond Howard isn't back there. They kick off. No one is there. No one looked for him. And even the up guys didn't look back for the ball. The Niners recover the ball that they kicked off at like the 10 because Howard was covered in mud and wanted to change his jersey at halftime. I just think I'm surprised that hasn't came up more. I'm sure it would if the Packers had lost that game. And the other, this might be a mix of shit and vomit. Who could forget 2006 against the Miami Dolphins? Chad Clifton, the day before, had strip mall sushi, as Mark Tauscher has talked about. And I still remember that happening. just that he was a late scratch. And Darren College had to play tackle for him. Couldn't play in that game. Was shitting and shitting and vomiting in Miami. Couldn't play. Packers ended up winning that game too. But yeah, a lot of piss, shit, and vomit. It's been throughout our history.
I have another shit one.
Okay.
So in 2022, this is not a Packers one, but DK Metcalf got carted off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was really worried, but he just had to shit. And he tweeted out after the game, he said the clinch walk wouldn't have made it with the crying emoji.
I've never heard that. It's called the poopy walk.
So apparently DK also, he had, you know, a very scary moment for him.
Well, he Paul Pierce it. You know what that is, right? That's the original of
Paul
this.
Pierce. But Paul Pierce actually pooped his pants.
It's funny that clip of him admitting it on like the halftime show where he's straight up like, I pooped my pants. Like it wasn't because I was hurt. I pooped my pants, and like no reaction from people. I'm like, oh man, he just he turned into the poop boy after that. With that, you know, that's all we're going to talk about the body excrements for this week. Todd, it is time for Stump Spenny. I believe Billy sent you the question. What is my Stump Spenny question for the week? Still upset that I had last week wrong when I said Niners over and over and over again, but didn't realize it was them.
Yeah, that's what I even like gave you the eyes a little bit. I was like, oh,
I know.
Close. All right, Stump Spenny. In the Packers' 2020 victory over Tennessee, who was Green Bay's leading rusher?
God, I think that was A.J. Dillon, unfortunately. Yeah, A.J. Dillon.
Bonus points, if you know how many yards he had.
It might be the only game that he went over 100.
That's what I was looking for. That is literally what Billy said in quotations. A.J. Dillon, his only career 100-yard game.
Because, yeah, again, that was the Bakhtiari one, too, where he was running down. I don't know if that was A.J. or not. It might have been. Was that the COVID year? Yeah. Was it 2020 or was it 2022?
2020 was COVID year, yep.
Yeah, because he did like the Lambeau leap with no fans and then played with the snore or whatever. I wonder if he would have the social media following he has now or the good graces that he had for the longest time if he didn't have that one successful game, because I cannot remember another great game out of A.J. Dillon besides that one. But I'll take it.
Yeah.
1-1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good job.
Yeah, I think do you see he was on the sideline this week too, and I put on my tweet. He's going to work for the Packers. He is going to be a sideline reporter or something like what John Kuhn does right now for the Packers eventually.
Oh yeah, that could be true. What exactly does John Kuhn do?
I don't know. He works for a radio station. I don't know how these.
Everybody's like, I don't know what he
does.
Well,
he works for a radio station. He does a podcast with Matt Schneidman, but then he also does maybe the game. I think it's 95.7. I'm just guessing on all this shit. They maybe carry the Packer game in the Green Bay area, so maybe that's what it is.
Okay.
And he's the sideline reporter for those games, but also does the radio hits for him. So
sure.
I don't know, but there you go. He's a chemist. Did you know that? He was a
degree in chemistry. I did.
He's a rocket scientist.
Yes, a very, very, very smart guy.
Speaking of smart, it would be smart for you to watch the Titans game on Sunday on Fox at noon. We have Kevin Kugler and Daryl Johnson on the call. Daryl Johnson, he's been around forever. Him and there's that other Fox guy who, Larry, no, fuck. I got to keep moving. Titans are 3-point favorites. A little surprised by that. Did you see the over-under for this game?
Wasn't it like 30 points or something?
36 and a half. I don't remember the last time seeing
that. That is a low.
I think Vegas thinks this little, you know, happy little honeymoon with Malik is coming to an end if we're going to have to rely on him a little bit more. But 36 and a half is such, that has to be the low points on the week. Titans on the year, they have lost both of their games to both the Jets and Bears by a score of 17-24. A little weird. And the offense is the island of misfit toys. Obviously, Will Levis is the quarterback, a very goofy, hilarious player who we'll only look back on in the future and be like, wow, remember that weirdo who was playing quarterback for the team who liked eating mayonnaise and just threw laterals backwards? And
he has an ad. Do you see his ad, his mayonnaise ad?
No, I have not seen the ad.
He has like, was it Hellman's?
I think that's the only brand. I think that's the only brand of mayonnaise. Yeah, Hellman's.
Whatever it is. And he's like, it's obviously not him, but he's like doing the splits on top of like mayonnaise.
Hell yeah.
On each leg. And he's like, I don't know what he says. Obviously something about mayonnaise and how great it is. But I was like, oh, that's actually like, if you're a mayonnaise company, it's like, we hit the jackpot. There's an NFL player. Like, let's make hay while the sun shines or whatever the term. What do they say? Anyway.
I think I argued. Did we talk about this last week?
Make hay while the sun shines?
Huh? No. What? Huh?
Oh,
Will,
what?
Will Levis.
Okay.
Billy and I, we watched the game at Lynn Lake this week. We argued about this with Will Levis. He's like, why would a company waste their money on Will Levis? And I'm like, well, actually, he's probably cheaper than like Patrick Mahomes when he got his ketchup deal.
Yeah.
And people know it's kind of funny, so it's kind of a nice little niche to hit. I don't know if you're going to generate any positive dollars from making Will Levis a spokesperson, but either way, mayonnaise.
It's at least like, remind everybody that mayonnaise is out there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're just reminding everybody, like, I don't know that anybody's going out and be like, oh, I got to try this mayonnaise.
That is true.
This trend.
Mayonnaise just exists, especially on sandwiches. It's like, I never think about mayonnaise. It's always like, if I need to add one more thing that needs something, I'm like, I guess I can throw mayonnaise on.
I won't put it on a sandwich, but I will eat it on a burger. Like, if it's on a burger, like, I just, like, it doesn't even, it just adds to the burger. It's good.
True. That too. Yeah. Because it's not like I'm a big, mayonnaise is a good like holder for other flavors like Chipotle mayonnaise or a good aioli, some basil, whatever. Again, the offense is the Island of Misfit Toys. Will Levis, the quarterback. Tony Pollard, who used to be with the Cowboys. Nuke, who is with Houston. Calvin Ridley, who is with the Falcons and Jaguars. And then Tyler Boyd, who had most of his career with the Bengals. But man, I'm dumb. If you've listened to this podcast, you know I'm dumb. I watched the highlights of the Jets-Titans game last week. I was getting ready for the Titans to look terrible. They don't look that bad. They were two plays away, the dumb Will Levis fumble, throwback, lateral thing that he was doing. And there was one other bad play that they had. If those plays didn't happen, they would have scored over 30 points. So I don't think that we should take them lightly. As mentioned earlier, Will Levis is the most pressured QB in the league at 53%. That's a lot. They've had punts blocked on back-to-back weeks, which is pretty fucking wild. Their defense, pretty good. I mean, again, only 2 weeks, but they have allowed the least amount of yards in the league, which ends up being also the least amount of yards per play, which is just fucking nuts. Third down, they're pretty solid, too. We'll see. They got a couple of decent names, but their front seven's pretty solid. Isn't that the strength of that team?
Well, yeah, they've got Tavondre Sweat at nose. They got Jeff Simmons is another guy.
Jeffrey.
They've got some good guys. They've got some names on defense, at least.
On offense.
I have not seen a Titans game, so I don't know, but it seems like, when you look at the roster, it's like, oh, there's some guys. Jamal Adams is on the team.
Oh, that's
just
kind of
funny that he's still,
There's like, Jamal Adams. There's like, he's a safety, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's like safeties that pop up like year six and you hear they're like a top five safety in the league and then they get a big deal and then they just kind of disappear. I feel like that's happened a couple times with like Seahawks players and like maybe there was a guy with the Bengals back in the day. Very, very important thing for me to bring up.
Well, what was Jamal Adams' nickname? Because he was like, he couldn't catch, right? Like, that was his thing. It's like, he was like a little missile, but like, he couldn't catch. It wasn't a nice nickname.
I couldn't tell you. I was going to say, if that's the lead-in, it's probably not very positive. But Titans game, I don't feel good about playing in Nashville. I still have a bad feeling in my mouth. One of the games I remember watching at the Herkimer, I mean, we just got shit on. I know Richard Rodgers looked like garbage in that game, too. And I just remember drinking and then going to see the movie. Oh, Hacksaw Ridge. Oh. Hacksaw Ridge is what I saw, actually. So if you look it up, I bet.
Good movie.
I bet 8 years ago is when Hacksaw Ridge came out. But that's when we got blown out by the Titans. Just a no culture football town. I do like Nashville. I've been at the Ryman to see Jason Isbell and Sturgill Simpson came out and play guitar.
2016.
That was very cool. Yeah, 2016. Oh, eight? Yeah. Right? Yeah, I was right.
8 years.
But I don't know. I just got a goofy feeling. They, you know, 2 years ago, they almost ended our season, but then we went on that little playoff run when Tannehill and fucking Derrick Henry ran on us. Treylon Burks had a big catch, too, in that game because I was there. Ugh, that was bad. But I just, I don't have a great feeling. I feel like we're almost coming off too much of a high. What brings me back is just the narratives and Malik Willis. Like, come on, this team's going to rally around him. I wonder if Matt's going to pull out the huge Disney card and make him a captain for this game, too, after only being on the team for, I don't know if you've heard this, for the last 3 weeks. But at the same time, that defense, this is the team that traded him away. This is the team that knows more about Malik Willis than probably, you know, any other team in the league. So how are you feeling going into this one, Todd?
Well, I think Jordan Love's playing.
Oh, so okay.
That's why this is a Brandon Narveson revenge game.
Okay.
Malik Willis isn't going to play.
Okay, I like that, yep.
Jordan Love is back. And, I mean, that's... If Jordan Love is back, how do you not feel good? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel good.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And that's going to be interesting to watch this week, too. Wilde, it's been... I always like the story within the story because I'm a loser. And it's like Wilde and Domofsky kind of talking about the availability of Love. Wilde is talked about because Wilde's daughter has like an MCL or some leg injury. And she runs cross country. Oh. And her doctor is Doc McKenzie. So
really?
It was very funny hearing Wilde talk about it when Tauscher was like pressing him for like, well, this. And Wilde's like, I know the guy who has looked at the MRI doesn't want to... And he was like trying to protect himself. It was pretty funny. But it's been two different things. Rob has said that Love was close to playing this week. There's been other reports like from Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport and Diana Rossini, who I don't think is a great journalist. It seems like she just kind of repeats what other people say. But Wilde was really high on her reporting, which kind of caught my ear. Okay. Diana seems like a very, very nice person. She's very friendly. She's good on camera, blah, blah, blah. Wilde's a very nice guy, blah, 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 blah. I wonder, because Wilde's like, I'm not going to say anything. I wonder if Wilde got his scoop, and he never like actually reports breaking news. I wonder if he is the source to Diana Rossini on Packer stuff. Because the two scoops that she's had, one, she reported this, but the only thing I can remember her actually breaking was Aaron Jones signing with the Vikings. And who would have an inside scoop on that? Jason Wilde, who had a decent relationship
with
Aaron Jones. I don't know if that's true or not, but Wilde and them have been saying it could be a couple weeks. Rob said, you know, they're close next week, so we'll see what happens. LaFleur did change his stance when last week he said Jordan Love would not have to practice to play. He did say on Monday that they would want him to practice before he plays, so we'll see. I still like the narratives. I think Malik winning would be pretty cool. But, Todd, anything else on this game? Are you ready for your score prediction?
I think I'm ready.
Okay.
You want me to do, should I do Billy's first again?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Billy has, the prediction is 20-9 Green Bay.
Oh, wow.
I always want to like read right away the next... But he's got his hot take. What do we call it?
Bold prediction.
Bold prediction.
So what is your score prediction? This is going to be a clunky all year reading his predictions, huh?
Yeah, well, I'll get better at it.
I have to
pull up my phone, like enter in my password.
Way to not give him your face.
I do give him my face. Oh, anyways, okay. For me, with Jordan Love, so I'm factoring Jordan Love's playing in my prediction.
Okay.
So I have 27-17 Packers.
Okay.
Is what I have. And I feel like my, and also Billy's, we both are feeling the same way about like what the defense is going to do to that offense. So.
Okay. I've been hemming and hawing on it. I wrote like the same score as last week, which was 25-24, which didn't make sense, but I was also the only team or only one of the three of us to pick the Packers to win. I'm going to say we lose 20-24. This just noon game.
Really?
Noon game in Nashville. I think the Titans are a little bit underrated. Tony Pollard's actually been running pretty solid for them. We still haven't had like a game where we had to stop the run.
Yeah.
That mattered a ton. I don't know. It's just, I guess, a winnable game where you had to stop the run. The Colts were just kind of bleh last week. So that'll be interesting. They do have a couple weapons outside. And again, the defense has been solid for them all year. It's still fresh blood with a new coaching staff and everything. But it just seems like a weird game that we're going to look back on and be like, God, why did we lose to the fucking Titans week three and Will Levis? So I don't, maybe Levis is going to fuck this game up too. It was pretty funny seeing last week his coach literally say to him on the sideline, what the fuck are you doing after he fumbled? So
yeah,
I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like this is going to be one of those where after a couple series, you're going to be like, fuck, this is, we're not going to know until the end of the last drive here, huh?
Do you want to do bolds?
That's how it works. Yes, we will move on to the bold prediction. What is Billy's bold prediction, Todd?
He thinks the defense will shut down the Titans and have Rashawn Gary will have 3 sacks.
Ooh, that's very bold. Oh, he also was right last week. He said Josh Jacobs would rush for over 150 yards, which he did, which incredibly bold.
Yeah, 152, right? Wasn't that what he rushed for?
Oh, I don't. I thought he said 150. I don't remember, but.
No, I'm saying didn't. What did he rush for? Was it?
Yeah, I said that
151 yards.
Oh, it was that close.
He actually rushed for. That was that close.
Which is somewhat bold, but Mixon rushed for that much the week before too, I think. But either way, very, very bold, and he was correct. Todd, what is your bold prediction?
I say 4 turnovers, and I just think because the defense is able to actually apply pressure because that offensive line isn't as good as these last 2 that we've gone up against. So I think they put the pressure on Levis, make him throw the ball in situations where he's not comfortable. I think I've heard he likes to run the ball a lot, so maybe if we play into that a little bit. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but my bold is 4 turnovers. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good. My bold prediction? Probably going to run the ball. I still think they're going to be conservative, and Malik Willis is going to be the quarterback for this game. I don't know. It'll be... I'm very curious to watch how that happens because the shit last week and a couple people saying like, oh, they weren't doing gamesmanship at all. They've been playing it straight. It's like, no, fuck off. They changed Love last week from questionable to doubtful on Saturday. It's like, come on, they knew all fucking week. With Love probably being out, I think we're going to run the ball more. We talked a little bit about running back going on the IR. I have Emmanuel Wilson scoring his first NFL touchdown.
Ooh.
I think it's bold enough. I like doing the first touchdown ones. You know, Malik had his first touchdown last week. That was pretty cool. Happy for him. Emmanuel Wilson, he's, you know, grinded his ass off the last year and a half or so. So, hey, hopefully he finds pay dirt. With that is the predictions. That is the preview for the Titans game. God, I don't even really have anything else here. Todd, do you have anything else, Packers?
I'm trying to think. No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. What? It's a noon game.
Yeah.
We talked about that. Noon game, Sunday, Fox Crew.
I will say, I think we have a bunch of noon games this year. The worst part about noon games is that when you watch the game, especially when you go to a bar or something, you got to drink a couple of beers. So, you know, drink 3 beers. Over a few hours, you know, get a little tired. It's like, I need to nap. And I hate having a Sunday nap at like 4 o'clock. Because then you wake up after the 3 o'clock games are kind of finishing up. You're like, fuck, I was going to go outside and mow the lawn or do something. But now it's about to get dark out. That's the one negative I have on noon games, which I experienced this past week.
Yeah, noon games are good. But if you go too hard at a noon game, once you get a little bit older, it's just, yeah, I agree. It's like, then it's like, you like fall asleep at dinner time. And then it's like,
at the table. And they're like, dad's got a problem.
Yeah, then they're like, oh, this is concerning.
We need to call somebody. Yeah.
I'm trying to see if the Vikings also play at noon next week. So if you're in Minnesota, the game will likely not be on.
That's what I was trying to figure out because I talked to my dad today, and he's up north in old Soup Town Superior, right at Lake Nebagaman. And he said last week they were able to watch the game. And usually the Duluth area, you get whatever Minnesota's getting, so I'm curious to see.
Oh, they were able to watch the game last
week? And then my dad was like, oh, well, you know, was it an AFC team or NFC team that the Vikings played? I was like, NFC? And he's like, oh, but we play an AFC team. I'm like, yeah, but we were on Fox. And then we just kind of, we didn't get anywhere after that. So I don't know what the map's going to look like this week.
Did they switch who gets which games? I feel like they do that sometimes where they say some AFC teams will get get Fox instead of, you know what I'm saying? Because it used to always be the AFC games were on CBS, yep, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, and all the NFC games were on Fox. That's why all of us are familiar with the Fox crew and the robot, but the AFC crew.
No robot.
No robot. We don't know what they do. Do they do anything cool?
No. They had,
we're the better
they
of the
had Tony
two.
Gonzalez and Phil Simms and whoever on there. But yeah, I don't know because like you're saying.
Who's the Steelers coach? Cowell.
Yeah, I was like, it's not Cowlesaw. That's not even a real, that's not even a last name anyone has. But yeah, I know they changed something that it's not CBS is all AFC, whatever. We're talking in circles now. We don't know. We'll find the maps when it comes out later this week. We will watch the game. Trying to think if there's anything else Packer related for this week. I can't think of anything. Todd, you got anything else? I don't have anything else.
Nothing.
Cool.
Nothing. Jordan Love, get healthy.
Yes, Jordan Love, get healthy. And with that, AJ Dillon, please take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy. Just watch. Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year. I worked all month. Then they took my money away. Yeah, well now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here.
You love me a good
burger. I can't believe there's a wiki page for Heat Miser.
Yeah, true, but at the same time, like, I'm not fucking surprised.
Have you ever looked for something on the internet and you're like, man, I cannot believe nobody has made a page about this?
Dude.
Like, I've had that happen before and I'm like, well, how do we not have a page about everything?
Google sucks now.
Yes, it does.
Google,
it's the worst.
I'm going crazy. Everything sucks. Everything is getting worse. Google. You know what I tried to do for this today? I knew for a fact that Chad Clifton was sick and couldn't play in like 2006 for the Packers because he had strip mall sushi the day before.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.